Hello and welcome to the Regen Agri podcast, the go-to place to hear everything about regenerative agriculture. Regen Agri is an initiative supporting farms, agribusinesses and the supply chain in their transition to regenerative approaches. We offer global capability with the aim of securing the health of the land and the wealth of those who live on it. For more information about our initiative and to find out how we can help you with your regenerative journey, visit regenagri.org. I'm your host, Rose Riley, and once again, I'm excited to bring you the latest developments on the global phenomenon that is regenerative agriculture. In this episode, we're exploring how regenerative agriculture can help build natural and financial capital. To provide insight into this topic, I'm joined by Rachel Colby-Simone, Head of Sustainability at Envivo Group in France, and Melanie Klomp, founder of the Soil Heroes Foundation. Envivo Group work with agricultural cooperatives to provide expertise to support farmers across the entire value chain, from buying seed to all aspects of crop management and protection. The Soil Heroes Foundation provides proof of practice by evidencing how regenerative farming is restoring soil, using Melanie's own farm in the Netherlands as a case in point. The foundation also provides a forum for knowledge sharing and is developing a community for farmers to learn and share experience of regenerative practices. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel and Melanie.
Hi, nice to be here.
Hi, Rose. Very happy to join you in this podcast.
So to start off, it would be great to just get an introduction to the Envivo Group, Rachel, and to understand how you're working with agricultural cooperatives, what your sustainability goals are, and how regenerative agriculture fits in with all of that.
Sure. So Envivo is a French cultural cooperative. We have about 200 French agricultural cooperatives within our union. And then we have a certain number of business lines to help accompany them, actually through a whole breadth of different types of activities. But today we can talk most importantly about how we are able to accompany the transition toward a more resilient agro-system, thanks to positive impact products and services. It means how we can guide farmers to have the kinds of tools and devices and services that they need to be able to contribute to carbon neutrality, to regenerating biodiversity, regenerating their soils, helping improve water cycles, helping to improve the fertility cycles, and all of these things then with the idea that it should help them also improve their revenues, either through diversification or just even increasing the kind of value added that they can be remunerated for.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Melanie, could you give us an introduction to Soil Heroes, both the company and the foundation?
Yes, as you recall, we are a Soil Heroes family, as I call it. So we have a for-profit entity that is providing farmers and companies with a digital platform where they can onboard on. The farmers are actually, through their practices of regenerative agriculture, getting the ecosystem services validated. We do that through three ecosystem services already. First of all, very known, the carbon sequestration. The second one is the water holding capacity. And the third one is the biodiversity. And on the other end of the platform, we've got the companies. Mainly, they are food and agri-related. So they have a resource out of agriculture. And they really want to create a payment for, you could say, the transition towards more regenerative agricultural practices. So that's the company. And then we have a non-profit entity of the Soil Heroes family, that is the foundation. And the foundation is, you could say, more developing towards three pillars. So that is the proof of practice. We have our own experience farm here in the Netherlands, just below Rotterdam. It's an arable farm of more than 300 hectares, which we farm regenerative on, you could say large scale, with high economic revenues integrated, a crop rotation with potatoes, onions, which are our most valuable crops. And on the other two pillars we are working is the knowledge sharing and building a network, because we feel that we really need to encourage farmers not only with knowledge, but also with a network of farmers and organizations who can support them going into that transition of agriculture.
Brilliant, thank you. So our focus today is on the value streams that can come from regenerative agriculture. So I'd love to hear from both of you some examples of those around whether it's financial or around climate resilience or around building natural capital.
And maybe it's a good that I can start. So in my introduction, I already told you that we have two entities within the Soil Heroes family. So the for-profit company is really there to give a farmer an incentive by changing his farm management into a more regenerative agricultural management practices. By doing that, he needs to onboard on the system. He's going to apply certain practices. We start with a timestamp zero on the soil quality. And through the years he is on the platform, we will see his soil health index increase. And with that increasing of the soil health index, his ecosystem services will be validated. And for that amount of validation, companies are willing to pay. We now see that the first companies are starting payments. We have companies in Belgium, we have companies in the UK, we have companies here in the Netherlands. And what we see is, first of all, they are mostly food related. So they have their resources out of agriculture. They see the big problems evolving in agriculture. They also see the urge that we need to change that. The current system, which we are now in farming, is very difficult to get it done through the general channels with government and other legislations and rules. So there needs to be another incentive to create some, secureness for farmers to try other ways of farming, because they know the current way of farming, that's for them the less risk they have. If they're going to change it, it will increase risk. And you could say to encourage them to go that way for a more resilient way of farming, we create that incentives. On the other way, we also know, and there I would say there is the capacity of the foundation a part of, that we see that there are also values which are not really paid for yet. But I think we need to create some noise about it, that also the community needs to change about that. We're thinking about risk management with climate change in the future. We already see on our experience farm that if we compare the resilience of our regenerative plots compared with our conventional plots, that the water holding capacity is not only better in very dry, hot seasons, where we see that we need to irrigate much less than we do on the conventional plot. But we also see now when we have a heavy rainfall that we don't have water on the plot anymore. It's there, it's gone. If you compare it with the conventional plots, we see that a lot of water is still on the plots. That gives a risk in yield, that gives a risk in harvest. And also those types of value, I think we need to develop more, and maybe later on also get in the general rules of security companies, of banks. So they validate such farms which are farming more regeneratively, that they have a better profile towards risk, also get the validation for that. But that's more, you could say, on the first stage, which we are getting knowledge around. And that's more the way we are working at the foundation, to gain the proof of practice. And therefore, if that's established, it will go on our for-profit platform and the company, and we try to get a payment through that then.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. And Rachel, can you describe some of the examples of natural capital that you're seeing created amongst the farms within the cooperative that you work with, and how you're working to try and generate value and calculate the value of that natural capital?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's really interesting all that Melanie was saying, and the fact of the matter is that currently I don't think that we do see enough value behind regenerative agriculture. I think clearly we have empirical and increasing scientific evidence to show to what extent there is actually an amazing value that regenerative agriculture can bring. Melanie was mentioning all of these risk factors, but we could also talk about adaptation to the climate and the way that that's actually going to help improve human health all along down the line, I think. And yet, for the moment, the farmers in France who have already moved forward on regenerative agriculture haven't necessarily found price premiums with that. There are some companies who are actually trying to do that, oftentimes, though, in a transitional approach, where they imagine that thereafter they don't have to keep giving a premium price for that. And for us, then, that is an additional difficulty in terms of helping farmers want to make the change But even so, what I think is really important here is that above what I would want to have as a price premium for these different crops that are produced in a better way with increasing nutritional value, we also have to see to what extent agriculture is a solution for climate change and adaptation. So Melanie mentioned some of those examples, which brings me to think that the value streams that we need are both the premium prices for the productions of the crops and the prices for these environmental services that the agriculture is actually providing. And for that, we have to come back to considering what the actual true value of farming is. Oftentimes on an international scale, there's a lot of debate over how can we talk about the true value of food. Some of the scientists within the UN have mentioned that maybe today we only pay about a third of what is the true value of food. And of course, those two other thirds, they are being paid for in some ways and will certainly be paid for by future generations. But if we take that even farther and we pair it with the true value of farming, then maybe we can actually consider that there's a broader spectrum of different types of actors who could actually help pay into the system that would be a more resilient system. And so I just wanted to give one example, a concrete example, is that in France, we have the carbon label, the Label Bas Carbone, which has been put together. Our teams have worked with the state to put that in place. It's, as was saying Melanie, it's actually a way of looking how we have the delta. So we look at the beginning and then we see 5 years later and what and how that has contributed to reducing emissions and also helping to sequester carbon in the soils. And with that type of scheme, it's true that oftentimes it's not only the food and ag companies who are wanting to inset the reductions into their own purchasing, but also then additional companies who are interested in buying those types of carbon credits for compensation. It's an exciting time, but we think also, just I share with Melanie, we need a little more incentives because oftentimes then those companies are going, they have such a huge volume in terms of needs of compensation that oftentimes they try to pull the prices down to make feasible for them within their economic model. And so here again, I think the true value of farming, we need to see then also how the governments can consider that this agriculture as a solution, this regenerative agriculture, is actually something that is investing in the common good. Le bien commun, we call that in France. And I think that it's the type of subject that probably we collectively need to be working on. But it's the data that'll help us make that case.
Fantastic. Thank you. You mentioned data there, which is a really interesting point, because without proof of change, we can't really prove the value that's being created. So I'd be interested to know on both sides how you're actually calculating increases that the farms are making in natural capital and then trying to attribute a specific value to those data points.
Yes, for us at the foundation, we do that, you could say, through three projects at this time. We have a project on water holding capacity, which we work together with Wageningen University. So actually, they are measuring the soil parameters every year. We compare regenerative farming plots with conventional farming plots, and then see how the, you could say, the soil structure and all the parameters are changing, and then compare them with the conventional plots we are having. Then a second project we are working on is on biodiversity. We do that mainly with another university, with the University of Amsterdam. This project is also part of a very big European project. It's called Fabulous Farmers, more focused on functional agrobiodiversity. So how, if you are going to apply more above soil biodiversity, you will increase, you could say, the natural pest control on your plots. Therefore, you need less input, chemical input, to prevent pests and diseases in your crops. On the other hand, it will support the in general biodiversity huge, because especially when you are looking at the landscape in the Netherlands, they are very poor and empty of biodiversity landscape elements. So if you can increase just 4% of your plots with, you could say, field margins or biodiversity lanes, it will increase your amount of suppression on pests and diseases. And on the other hand, it will increase enormously the amount of natural pollination. And I think both are items we really need to also address to governments, that it's very important that we are going to, you could say, support these types of landscape elements more in farmland. And the third one, we are now in a startup phase. That's the one for nutrition, where you could say the first one is more very obvious topic for climate change. The second one is to prevent biodiversity is further declining, but we want to add and increase the biodiversity. The third project is more about health, because we know that literature is saying that healthier soils are producing more healthier products. Not only the concentration of nutrients is higher, but also the variety of nutrients is higher. And we will start a three-year project now, in which we will see if we can create a proof of practice for that. Also, and not only by looking at the difference between region ag plots and conventional plots, but also looking at if we can see differences between the separate interventions of region ag practices. So by doing that, we also hope we can, you could say, validate the practices also aligned with nutrient density in the products which we are producing.
On our side, so we're conducting similar type projects because they really are important, and we still don't yet have enough reference points for that. So we're quite, you know, moving in that same direction. Maybe just to point out one or two additional things. One of the projects we have, we're looking very closely to including this agroecological infrastructure, because we know that something like biodiversity is going to be linked to the passage. Actually, it's not something that's still, but it's moving around. And so how can we have this approach? And if we add in, for example, hedgerows with the farms, then how can we see that that is actually something that enhances even agricultural productivity? Whereas oftentimes the fear is that it's something that's going to take away from how the size of their plots. So we're trying to look more increasingly in how all of this interacts. And so that leads me to your question, Rose, about what are the data points that we're following in order to look at this? And that is still a big question. So we're looking at all of the regular aspects. What are the crops and the diversity of the crops? How much biomass in the soils? What are the practices in terms of input? Or the other sort of more natural inputs that are being used. We're looking at all of those different aspects and using, like I was saying, one of our tools, Carbon Extract, to start already programming what that could involve. But we have an initiative at InVivo called InVivo Quest that's been going on for about 5 years, where we spend time looking in most of the different markets across the world in terms of what they're putting out in terms of data tech. And what we see is that the big focal point is really knowing how to improve the soil biodiversity. And we have come across a certain number of startups who are looking at that, especially now that genetic analysis materials have become somewhat democratized. And so it's possible now to actually understand better within a soil, what are the interactions between the fungi, the bacteria, and other types of microorganisms. But what we see too is that then it's too expensive. And so one of the things that we're trying to work on is how can we actually, what would we have as a proxy that would enable us to go ahead and work with these things now without actually having to pay the hundreds or thousands of euros per soil sample. So we use other data, of course, you know, that sort of give us a sense and still accompany farmers. And notably, we have the regeneration index that we work with coming out of one of the associations here in France, Living Agriculture, Pro et Agricole du Vivant. But we know that it's not going to be enough if we want to monetize, but we can't have tools that cost more administratively than the actual value that we could hope to create in terms of what a market would pay for. So that's one of our conundrums.
Thank you. And I'm interested to know, with the brands that are starting to get involved in actually paying farmers to offset some of their emissions or other elements of work that they're trying to improve on. How is that working? Is it just carbon that they're interested in, or are there other elements of natural capital that you're finding they're open to investing in?
Yeah, I would say that, of course, the number one is the carbon. That's also, if you look at the global market, carbon is the only ecosystem services which we know really have a payment regulation now around. But if you're looking from a farmer's perspective, I would say that water holding capacity, so the water retention, is much more important, because through the climate change, the periods of dry, hot summers are going to increase, and also the amount of water will stay the same over the year. But if you see when it's raining, it will rain more heavily. So it means that the soils really need resistance, not only resilience in very hot, dry situations, but also when it's raining a long period, a lot of water is coming out of the air. So that's, I would say, from a farmer's perspective, biodiversity and water holding capacity is more important. And I would say for society, the nutrition aspect is very important, because if we're looking at the very big health problems which we are facing, then knowing that the food we are eating is not, you could say, nutritious enough to get the people in a healthy stage. I would say the COVID already showed us that the people who are obese, the people who have bad health, are more vulnerable for COVID, for instance, than the people who have a good health. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, yeah, the world really needs to open up for more ecosystem services and not only stick to the carbon. Of course, climate change is a very big problem. But if you are looking globally, I would say getting enough fresh water to create a good, healthy crop is even as important. And the same is with biodiversity. Yes, we are already, as a human, part of the ecosystem service. And although it seems like it's not important that we have less amount of wild bees or the pollination goes down, we can't, those are services we never could replace for synthetic or artificial other types of systems. So I would say really this is the time that we really need to look up and see that although for the other ecosystems they are not paid yet, we really need to make noise about it and see how we can get that attention from big governments. That's also why in Soul Heroes we always attach water holding capacity and biodiversity now in our eco payment. So if you are buying a carbon payment, we also include water holding capacity and biodiversity, because we see those three as, you could say, a united product, which are the core ecosystem services we need for now.
No matter what, we do have this economic equation to deal with. And in the question of, can we have payment for other services other than just carbon? It's a difficult one. What the different COP26, COP27, what's coming out now is that increasingly the standards recognize that we can't only work on carbon, we have to work on carbon plus nature. That's very good news. But what that arrives then at is that a lot of the potential buyers for some of these services, they figure they can pay just one price for everything. And while I can understand that they would have that hope, I think we have to be really careful about actually putting value on the different types of services. It's not because you've used your tractor less and you've reduced emissions that, but that also in the meantime, then you've improved the biodiversity in the soil that has less been overturned, et cetera, that everybody can say, okay, there, I bought this crop for a certain price, and so now I've already done my part. No, we're talking about something bigger, and we need to actually move on to this new system of resilience, and everybody has to play their role in it. And so these neo farmers who are coming in, I think that they're more excited about this type of approach, but we have to be sure then that we have the kind of socioeconomic model that goes with it.
And I'm interested to know as well what your thoughts are around another area of value, which is the workforce and the fact that within agriculture generally, we have an aging workforce and we have a risk of losing knowledge and capabilities out of the agricultural sector. What do you think the role of regenerative agriculture is in inspiring young people into agriculture?
So I would say that what we're seeing in France is that it actually has a real very important value, because actually we see a huge amount of farmers who are going to be retiring, and more their children don't necessarily want to take over the farm. And so we actually have an influx of what they call neo-farmers who are coming in, who have had other types of activities and who are now interested in farming because agriculture has so much to bring to societal stakes. Most of those who come, they're really interested in that type of pride factor that goes along with it. And the farmers who have already made the transition actually do tell of their improved well-being in the way that they not only feel that increased pride, but also just for many of the reasons also that Melanie mentioned, actually their work is not harder as one would presume, but actually is improved by using these nature-based solutions. So it's something really positive.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, for the Netherlands, I think we have the same problems as Rachel's recalling that we have, if you look at the average age of the farmers in the Netherlands, they are very old. They will retire very soon. Often the children don't want to continue with it, or they lost their interest in farming because farming in the Netherlands requires a lot of regulation and requirements. A lot of children also don't want to start a farm which has such low revenues, economic revenues, and so they decide not to go further with the farm. Also recognize that there is an increased interest in, you could say, non-farming people who are not coming from farms but are very interested in farms. But for them, it's very difficult to buy themselves in a farm. For instance, if you look at the price of the arable plots here in the Netherlands, they are so extremely high. And that also, you could say, is one of the causes why the farms are having a difficult time in creating enough economic value for them in the business. You see new models around farming coming around, but I really must be honest, that is so little percentage of all the farms. If you see it in general, it won't touch upon the 1% of all the farms. So we are still, you could say, in the modus that if you don't have a farm within your family which you can take over, you can't go start farming. On the other hand, we also see that a lot of farms are quitting because they don't have a successor following up for themselves in the business.
So to wrap up, I'd like to know your advice that you'd give to someone who's looking for ways to generate natural and financial capital via regenerative farming.
Well, okay, I will start. Yeah, of course, the company has created a platform for that. So I would say that if they are interested to apply Regen Ag practices, I would say have a look at the website of the Soil Heroes company. We are happy then to see how we can connect such a farmer with a company who is willing to pay for the ecosystem services, so the farmer will have economic revenue by applying the Regen Ag practices. So that, I would say, is the first pillar I would recommend him. The second one is also, build your trust in that regenerative agriculture is really the way forward. So building knowledge around it, talk to other farmers, likewise farmers. It won't help just that's my experience, try to convince farmers who don't have the real incentive themselves to go for a transition, but try to connect yourself with farmers who are also in that transition, because that will gain their positive energy. It will give them more self-confidence, I must say. And it will exchange also knowledge in implementing the different types of practices. On the foundation, we for instance, defined 20 guidelines, how you could improve and implement your Regen Ag practices on your farm. And of course, there is the foundation where if farmers have questions, they can go to, and we hope we can provide them with knowledge and a network of farmers, which they, you could say, build their own society and strengthen themselves, empower themselves in this journey. Because I think that is really about what regenerative agriculture is about. It's not just one practice done. It is a holistic system. It is a procedure you need to be doing. It is a thing you need to do year after year. It's not done in yet 1 year. You need to take time for it. The crop circles are involved. You have climate change. You have different weather conditions. So every year is different. The only thing you can do is step by step thinking about, okay, which steps I'm going to take now and how the soil is going to improve by this.
So thanks. I don't have much to add. I agree fully. And I think that there are networks out there. There are companies, foundations that can also accompany those farmers. And getting out of isolation is clearly a game changer, I think, for many farmers. So I'm going to reframe the question to then say, hey guys, we're in the 21st century and we know now it is really impossible to think that we're going to change the food system only through the farmer. We have to get real. We need everybody to step up. I'm talking about governments. They need to understand what the risk is involved, how they can actually help, understand the way that agriculture can be a solution with benefits for all sorts of areas and not only food. And that agriculture can be a real boon for that, but that they have to recognize it and give incentives around that. The financial service companies, they have to also realize that it's not just about being able to change your insurance policy to make a farmer want to change, but actually consider the true value of farming and the way that when a farmer goes for regenerative agriculture, that they are providing these ecosystemic services that once again are actually going to help manage both savings and added value across a whole much broader value chain than simply the food and ag. And then we have to have just citizens also start understanding that the role that the farmers are going to play, it depends a little bit on what their choices are going to be at the supermarket as well. So I agree with Melanie. That's the right advice for the farmers, but the farmers cannot be alone in making this resilience transition that is so important for all humans' well-being.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me today for the Regen Agri podcast. To learn more about what we've talked about in this episode, please find the links to Invivo Group and Soil Heroes Foundation in the show notes. If you would like to know more about how the Regen Agri Initiative can help you on your regenerative journey, from advisory services, monitoring of on-farm data and regenerative certification through to carbon verification, please visit regenagri.org. You can also check out our case studies and articles and gain access to our digital hub for free insight and advice. Alternatively, follow us on Twitter or Instagram at regenagri_org or search for Regen Agri on LinkedIn.